Very excited about this conversation today. It's creative freedom in the age of the algorithm, and this is something that we think a lot about, talk a lot about at Vero, which is the ad-free social network. Before we start the conversation today, though, I want us all just to take a really brief moment to think about the importance of art and creativity for us, specifically, obviously, music, while we're here today. Music has always been fundamental in fostering connection, and it really, I think, helps us feel into our experiences, understand ourselves, understand each other more deeply, and its limitless creativity has driven culture, influenced the human experience for a long, long time. And in the age of algorithms dictating our engagement, I think it's now more important than ever for us to look at the ways to future-proof music's creativity. So today we are going to look at the meaning of creative freedom and get an artist's first perspective from these wonderful panelists. We are going to look at the impact of technology platforms on culture, creativity, and artist development. This is going to be specifically social and distribution channels, platforms. We're going to chat about how passionate fans can play, I think, an even more significant role as new patrons of the arts. And lastly, a big heavy hitter for us all, which will be why we need creativity and art for connection, community, and thriving cultures. So I'm going to introduce everybody, and we're going to get stuck in. So I am Jamie Jessup. I am here representing Vero Music, which is our artist first record label, and it is a creative services extension of Vero Social. I am head of creative partnerships, and I look after our artists and creators, and it's a collaborative relationship with them, helping us design the tools and the culture on our platform, which is all about connecting people with their passions. So first up on our panel, we have Hackney's very own singer-songwriter Jay Appiah brings us a unique sound to his song, blending psychedelic funk, rock, and his Ghanaian influences. After cutting his teeth touring with Gorillaz and recently opening for Michael Kawanaka's European tour, his current EP, That's the Thing About Time, has received critical acclaim, stepping into the spotlight as a solo artist. And then next up... What? Next up, pop and soul artist Evensen burst into the scene just last year, 2024, with his viral debut EP, Sadly, I Still Love You, spawning the hit single, If I Ever Feel Better. Now he's back with his latest single, You, and gearing up for his debut album and summer of live shows. And Roisin Warner, our head of marketing at Blackstar Agency, a multifaceted career and wealth of experience. Roisin has spearheaded major campaigns with the likes of Mike Towers and Sam Willis, traveling worldwide on live productions for artists like Sam Fender, Jack Jones, Biffy Clyro, U2, just to name a few. And last but no means least... the creative mastermind behind Until the Ribbon Breaks and creative contributor to Vero Music, Pete Laurie Winfield, has recently enjoyed a creative renaissance with masterpiece album Visitor, hitting streaming gold with his prescient single 2025, a song he wrote 10 years ago that accurately predicted the future of life in the realm of advanced technology. And I am highly hopeful that he's going to predict the next 10 for us today. So,
or not.
Or I'm hoping. All right, so let's get stuck in. Thanks, everyone. Let's get stuck in. So, Pete, you up first. I want to hear from you. Your take on creative freedom, what it means to you, and how you balance that with guidance outside and the commercial aspects of being a music artist.
Wow, it's early for this one.
I know, go.
When you were saying creative freedom at the beginning there, the first thing that came into my head is that I think when you initially think about creative freedom, you think what the world outside will allow you to have, you know. But actually, a lot of the times, I think it comes internally first. In fact, Jay and I were talking about this on the way. I spend a lot of time in my own way as a creative, imagining that I don't have creative freedom within myself, that I can't find a way to get to where I want to, and then beyond that, I'm not going to be able to present that in the world. So it's but there's moments, whether it's on stage or in the studio or the inception of an idea, where I feel completely creatively free. Like, you know, you hear athletes talk about flow state and things like that. There is a moment for me in every song or a video I make, it's often the beginning of the idea, where I feel completely creatively free. Because I feel like there's limitless potential for this idea that I have. And then incrementally, self-doubt, and then the outside world starts coming in. You feel that creative freedom diminish a little bit more. And then it's just that, it's just trying to find it back and find it back, and you do get there. But creative freedom for me is trying to maintain that original feeling of just, I just don't want external thoughts even. I want to remain in this feeling. That's why for me, I do any of it, is to have the feeling I had when I was a kid, which is you press a button and you can't believe a sound comes back at you. And in that, you realize that there's limitless potential, you know? So yeah, for me, creative freedom is about stopping thoughts and just doing and being as childish as I possibly can, is what it means to me.
Thank you. Jesse, tell me how you've balanced challenges, the commercial demands more so, with your own creativity.
I would agree with what Pete said. I think I kind of view creative freedom as like this small child, or this small child version of myself that I kind of have to protect. And at times that means being quite aggressive with protecting that child, like you would your actual child, you know. It's just about kind of trying to keep that energy as pure as possible. And remember, like you said, Pete, what that feeling was when you were a kid, when you weren't thinking about bills or having to, you know, pay for whatever. You just kind of wanted to create and live in this imaginary, beautiful world, and trying to maintain that feeling throughout, I think, is important. Not thinking about anything else, not doing it for the purpose of trying to acquire more numbers or make some money, just doing it purely for catharsis, you know. So yeah, I think it's more about trying to protect that child, and at times that's in a really soft and subtle way, and other times it's in a quite aggressive way, but just protecting that thing, you know, that core.
Roisin, you obviously have to do a hard lift for artists in balancing this with them and for them as you know, a marketing guide. So how do you feel and think the industry can better foster creativity and the commercial demands for artists?
I think that's such a deep question. It's like, how do you fix the industry in a way?
If you could.
Yeah. I think that it's just really important to make sure that you have a team of people around you who understand your vision, who understand that you're going to be evolving throughout your campaign. When you begin your campaign, you know, we have some artists who come to us, they've already got the music ready to go, but they want to work on their creative storytelling, or they've already got their music videos, they've already got their press shots, their artwork and all the rest of it. But sometimes they want to change that throughout the campaign. And you need to have a team around you who understand that creativity is a process, and that it's not just a simple package that's tied up neatly with a ribbon and then we're ready to go and launch a campaign and make everything really, really wonderful. It's something that grows with you through those few months, through that year of that campaign. And you have to have people who are able to grow with you and who are able to help guide you through that creative process as well. So I think something the industry can do better is actually be more understanding of the artist's journey, of their mental journey, because obviously creativity comes from a mental headspace, and also just help to develop and help to sort of positively challenge in a way that is going to help the artist to grow and to understand why certain changes need to be made within the creative aspect of their work in order to make it a successful campaign as well. So there's a fair few things
that's
within that.
No, that's really, it is deep and layered, and that's a really great answer. Evenson, for you, what is it like? I'm fascinated specifically because you're fairly new. I mean, you've been practicing this, but like the explosion came last year. How is your creative practice? Like, how do you think about this? Like, how are you approaching it with, you know, we're going to segue obviously into platforms, but like, how are you thinking about it now for yourself? No, you work hard at this.
Well, I like to think of myself as a bit of a creature. Like the way I say that, I'm a bit of like an outdoor enthusiast. I love going on hiking. I love interacting with the world. The way I see the world is the way I see art. Like when I go on a hike, I touch a tree, I touch a leaf. I like drawing out a sunset. And so when I go out into the studio, I interact with everything the very much in the same that I interact with the world. And so I've been doing like writing camps specifically to kind of like get back to a place of like, I don't know, like inner peace and reconnecting with that inner child that like Pete spoke about and also Jay spoke about as well too. And that kind of allows me to do that. So like meditation and doing that, because I feel like the industry, a lot of the times it kind of can pull you away from yourself. So everything that I do is like kind of getting myself back to myself, because there's so much distractions. You know, I get on my phone, I get on TikTok, and I'm on there for like 40 minutes. I'm like, where did all the time go? I should have been writing a song right now. And so it's everything that I do is like going towards like that homeostasis and equilibrium within. And so, yeah, I think that answers
it. I mean, yeah, it's amazing. it really does fascinate me, though, like how every artist places themselves at the beginning of that creative journey. Like, how do they ground? Like, how do you get into that? And then as Roisin, as you said, like, how do you move with it when, you know, the relationships with all the team around you come in and the outside world comes in and opinions of friends and other creators and what other people are doing. You know, it's no easy thing.
Yeah.
And you're battling there's a lot going on out there in the world. And obviously technology and the platforms that we've got have incredible positives, major challenges, things to learn from. And you know, today I don't want the conversation to be a rant of what's wrong about them. It's like they've been blessings. They've opened up worlds for lots of people and creativity for lots of people. But I think it's thinking about how we build them, obviously, going forward. So actually, we're going to stay with you, Evenson. Can you talk to me a little bit about your experiences of how technologies have these platforms specifically? I'm talking social, we don't need to name any, but just the socials, of how they've impacted your own creative development. Is this something you are actually actively thinking about as you are pulling the final bits together? Are you tweaking things based on these platforms? Like, how are they influencing you?
I think that like hyper-connectivity and also the ability to essentially tap into anything anytime you want. I remember like being a kid going into Blockbuster or going into the library and like going and like grabbing a DVD, going home, putting the DVD into the TV and interacting with that. But now, like, for example, if I'm like really into like shoegaze or something, I could just like, you know, go into that like hall or go into that room and stay there. I can interact with people around the world, and I could really dive deep into it in a very, very quick manner, in a very intimate manner as well too. And on another front as well too, it's so crazy like being able to, like how quick everything is, right? You post a song and then someone's commenting on something from like Thailand talking about, oh, like this helped me get through my day. And that kind of helps you sort of shape how you're going to, not necessarily how you're going to create things, but it kind of reaffirms whether or not you're doing things right or not. And I think a lot of the times that is super helpful because it's really lonely as a musician. A lot of the times it's just like you and your art. You put it out into the world and hopefully it lands somewhere. So then, you know, that relationship with tech and like that ability to just like connect with people like on a dime, it's like, it's the greatest thing. It's the greatest feeling in the world. I love it so much. It gives me like all the reasons to keep on going and to keep pushing and to not give up. And so, yeah, I think I see more positives than negatives for sure.
That's what we want, isn't it? Because it's not going anywhere. Pete, can you talk specifically about your interactions with fans and how that on socials and how that audience engagement is influencing, or maybe not, but influencing your work? And
yeah, absolutely. Sorry, was that the...
That's the question.
Yeah, it's been a funny old journey with that. I've been doing this for a long time and a few different iterations, and feel very lucky to have been doing this, fostering fans and interacting with them. And now, the way things are now, and it's so completely different. And I actually had made a decision, if I was going to make another record, that I was not going to be in the comments, because where it took me initially is into comparison and really reading too much into negative comments. And you know, the thing of only, there could be 1,000 good comments and you just see that one in neon lights that just says, yeah, not for me, not even that bad. And and like all the other ones just get deleted in your mind, and that's the only comment on them. And for a while that would affect actually how I thought about making music. Even I found myself wanting to appease the outside world, and then you realize that it's impossible. A, B, it would negatively affect my art in the sense of I don't think it's, it wouldn't have just been genuine. And so I made a decision that if I was going to make another record, I was going to do it completely away from that, never allow myself to look at comments and anything like that. And then I realized that that was further alienating myself. So then I just thought about it in a different way, and rather than just reading them, I would reply to all of them and try and foster a relationship with these people, whether the comments were good or bad. And that changed everything. I've just got chills, yeah. Because I like you said, even tonight, I can't believe it when I get a message from someone across the world who says, I got one the other day that said that a song of mine or my music was, what did they say, like fundamental to their relationship with their partner. I couldn't even understand it reading it. It was beyond my comprehension that that could happen. And that actually has now become what allows me to continue and make a record again. It's the opposite now, is that relationship is why I want to keep doing it. Because it makes me feel useful. It makes me feel like I'm contributing. Like you said, it can be such a lonely, isolating thing. In the studio, four walls all the time, and you press a button and your file goes out into the world. And that can just feel crazy-making. But because of platforms, I think if we use them in a way to foster these relationships, that room you're in gets way bigger, you know? So, yeah, sorry, I went on for a while there. But it's that balance of not catering to those comments artistically.
And the algorithms.
And the algorithm, but fostering a relationship with those people.
It's a mindset shift in a way, and a behavior.
Yeah.
How to approach it, which is not the way they necessarily, the platforms are asking you to behave, right?
Totally.
Looking for you to behave. So, Roisin, how are you thinking about this in terms of the insights in navigating data, algorithms for artists in obviously getting them across the world?
I think there's...
I feel like I'm giving you the biggest, deepest, hardest questions. It's all on you for the fixes.
It's all good. Yeah. There's so many like different things to consider when you're obviously posting on socials. And obviously there's so many different social platforms and there's loads of different tools that you can use within each platform. And the more that you use those tools that are native to each platform, the more your content and your profile is going to be pushed within that algorithm. But one of the things that we always explore, particularly with new clients, is when we're exploring what people are posting or online and how to tell the story of the song, of the artist brand, of the campaign, we want to make sure that it's all in the artist's voice. And this word is thrown around so, so often, and I'm sick of using it, but it is true. Like, you need to stay authentic to yourself and to your tone of voice, because the second that someone else comes along and tells you what to say, rewrites that post for you, reconfigures your whole social profile, it's not going to resonate in the same way. And the main thing, I think, is that as long as you are posting content that you feel is true to you, is genuine to who you are, is genuine to the project, then you are on the right track. And exactly like you said, Joe, as well, like one of the things is that not sitting and getting bogged down by the data and being like, oh my God, I've had thousands of views on this post, but not so many on this post. Like, you can, of course, sit down and explore the data science behind why that is. Like, how did I do all the right things on that? Did I put the right tags on there? Did I use the right words? Did I use the trending sound, et cetera, et cetera? But that's only one part of it. So you can explore, you know, playing into the trends, playing into those algorithms, and yes, your profile will get pushed further, your content will get pushed further, but it's not to say that the content that you are producing that is very authentic to you, who you are, and to the story that you are telling for you as an artist, or for this song, or for this album or EP campaign, all of that digital storytelling is, I'd say, like more important, because all of this stuff is going to sit and stay on your profile. And as you get new followers, as you get new fans, people are going to be diving into your old content as well. Some of that old content is going to be resurface and keep being reserved to a lot of people. So a track that you may have released 6 months ago may start to really resonate with followers and fans, you know, 6 months down the line, a year down the line. And because you've got all of that content that was very true to that storytelling at the time, people are going to be able to go back and actually explore that, do a deep dive into that, explore who you are as an artist, what your voice was as an artist when you wrote that song at that time. Mm. So
find the thread, keep the thread.
Exactly.
Some artists will remove everything, right, and do clean slate for each release.
And that's fine. So, because sometimes you want to completely change your look, you want to completely change your brand, that's absolutely fine. But we'd always say never, ever delete that. Never delete that, because you lose all of the data. You want to archive it.
Yeah. Jesse, I want to hear your comments on this. Like, how are you thinking about your social presence and your activity there? Because, you know, coming out new as a solo artist after doing a lot of work with a lot of musicians, and your look and vibe is changing. How are you doing it? How are you thinking about it?
I think, like, coming from session world, like where I would be singing backing for other artists and kind of aligning maybe more with their brands, I feel like I had to take stock of my authenticity and what I was trying to communicate, who I was. And that does mean maybe deleting some stuff and actually leaning more into who I am. But yeah, I think these platforms are, I think they're fantastic. I think they allow for us to communicate with more people in a room, like you said, Pete, and just connect with more people, which is the reason why we actually make art in the first place. It's just connection, firstly to ourselves, and then to our brother who we want to play the demo to, and then to our mum who might feel this one, and then, do you know what I mean? And and then to everybody.
That's the worst negative.
Yeah, yeah. It's all right, son. Yeah, it's not great. But like, so for me, I kind of flip sometimes between the two headspaces because I'm naturally quite introvert, and I'm not somebody who's in a room and just wants to like super be seen and known. I'm kind of happy to kind of play the corner and stuff. But on social media, you kind of have to be more present. And it actually quite works if you're somebody who tends to want to just be a bit more of a homebody sometimes. Like, you could just put your content out online and connect with people from around the world. And I think that's an amazing thing. And actually, it's kind of made me think about, when you mentioned authenticity, it's just made me think about, like, if you're in a room and you're meeting people for the first time and you're just being yourself, that's the version of myself I'm trying to get closer to online. I think sometimes it's easy to be overly curating and I like these color palettes and this is my logo and this is cool. This looks, you know, dope. But, and all of that is great because again, that's communicating your vision or your art. But there's also the you that's just sat up here right now that just talks how you talk and looks how you look in the morning, and just, you know, when you're playing a song, that's who you are. So I personally feel like I need to get a bit better at doing more of that stuff, which is just putting the camera on the side of the room and just playing to people, because that is authentic, you know. But yeah, I think it's great. I think the only thing to watch out for again is just trying to pander or cater to things, and then removing yourself more and more from who you are. I consider myself like an organic artist, so for me, being organic is super important. And I think that when you're leaning super into trends and stuff like that, you might start pulling yourself more away from being organic and become a bit more synthetic. So, yeah. But overall, I think social media and these platforms are a great way to connect with other human beings.
And it's a journey, right? So we're seeing social platforms evolving and changing, and we're seeing a lot more direct-to-fan models, which obviously is looking to try and balance out the value of algorithms and also just allowing artists direct access to fans, and fans much better access to their artists, and curating and taking care of that relationship, which is what I want to talk to about next. I'm very passionate about this. I really believe that fans, and I think it's our job to put fans in more of a significant position to be able to be new patrons of the arts, so that we can open up some of these doors and these gates that are locked and sort of not locked, but the keys are held by a few, and basically putting it more in the hands of many, your fans directly. So Pete, I'd love to hear from you your initial ideas about superfans and how, and relation, or not even necessarily want to call them superfans, but these sort of deeper relationship with fans and how this could be crafted and developed in a digital space. Like, how should we be thinking about this?
Fans, anyway, I don't know about anyone else here, but it even that concept is difficult in similarly to what you were saying. I'm naturally introverted. I just want to be in the studio. And so then the idea of stage and audience feels complicated to me. I don't actually like that separation, because then that makes me feel there's a spotlight, metaphorically and really, and I don't feel comfortable there. So much like you said about the social platforms, Jay, is like, I actually think they can be amazing at stopping that feeling. A super fan to me is just a good friend, is really how that actually feeling about it like that takes the anxiety away from me of that distance between you and an audience, which feels uncomfortable on stage and it feels uncomfortable in real life. Like, I'm not saying that's the same for every artist, but for me, if you walk in a room and you know that you're there to be the artist, you're nervous and you feel tense, and then suddenly you're not being your authentic self because you feel like there's a pressure to perform in a certain way. But so fostering a relationship where it doesn't feel like that, and so that you can just chat about things that aren't even your art, and creating this relationship where there's just a level playing field, there's just a level relationship, there's no hierarchy in it. So, because I think when you feel like you're having to sell something, that's where the problem comes. I don't want to feel like I'm selling a product to someone ever. I want to feel like it's something that they want. Again, that goes back to the feeling of wanting to be useful. So fostering a relationship with someone who is a super fan is just to me about giving people what they actually would want from you. Not just, this is what I'm doing in 6 months, like it or lump it, buy it or don't. If you're a fan, you will. If you're a fan, you won't. It's more like, what would you like me to do?
Yeah.
Maybe I could do that. If you tell me what you want, maybe I could do that. We could do it together.
There's opening the opportunity for more of a mutual exchange, an exchange of
Absolutely.
Sorts. Because what we've got now is, it's a little 2D. It's a little, I mean, it's very broadcasty, isn't it? We're seeing spaces open up where there's rooms, and you can get closer to, you know, to your creative,
Absolutely.
To your artist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Not feeling like it's purely a shop window.
I loved that about the leveling the playing field as well. Evenson, can you expand, obviously, on your take on what Pete's talking about, but specifically how you're thinking about your fans and the community, and especially in your growth as you're growing, how you're thinking about them, bringing them along?
I mean, if I had access to like a D'Angelo Discord, you can take all my money. I'll pay for literally anything. I think about it from like the lens of being a fan. And if I were on the other side, it'd be the coolest thing. I wouldn't even care if if my artist was like constantly like messaging in there. Just like one message every single month is literally just enough.
It's the feeling of it.
Like 5 years for a Lord album. She's about to drop another album right now. If I like knew what she was like doing in between those 5 years, yeah, I would pay like $5, $10, $20, $30 a month. I don't know. it'd be the coolest thing in the world. But I think that access is really cool. I think more and more now, especially with being a modern artist, people are more so leaning into like the idea of being like mysterious or being elusive. So I think that there's actual real currency in actually providing access and reducing that distance that you were speaking about, Pete. I think it provides a lot of provides a lot of utility in the industry right now, where things are becoming a bit more fragmented and separated, even though we are far more connected than we've ever been. So I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I agree. And Roisin, though, obviously is one of the team members having to help artists manage a lot of these different platforms and everything going, you know, all the jobs that they have to do other than just create the art themselves, how are you helping artists and thinking about helping artists and their teams in maintaining and engaging these fans, and building super fan communities on them?
Well, I think one of the main things that we always have to remember is that super fan is a word that is used so often.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, if you're breaking it down, you're talking about a fan, another human being, exactly like you're saying, another human interaction. And you're wanting to explore you as the artist and in relation to your music and the art that you're putting out. So it's really important for us to constantly think about who that fan is or who those fans are and how to give back to them. Because again, back to your point, no one wants to be sold to. None of us do at all. Like on socials is a it says it in the word, social media. Like, it's a back and forth interaction between people, between, you know, human beings. And you don't want to just be sold, whether it is by an artist or by a brand, like, my new song's out, go listen to it. My new video's out, go look, go watch it. Like, I'm playing a gig, go buy tickets. You want to actually be part of that world, and you want to see maybe a bit of yourself reflected. You want to see a bit of yourself reflected in there, because that's what's going to resonate most with you. And that's what's going to build that connection with you. And that's what's going to make you engage with those people. That's going to be what makes you like or share that post, to be able to bring your friends or family or whatever into that community as well. And again, going back to your point about engaging, like, via comments, what we do is we do a lot of social listening. So we actually see what fans are talking about, what fans are saying that they love most about a post or a video or a song. And then we encourage the artist to explore doing more content like that, or kind of pivoting the strategy slightly, so that those artists actually feel seen and heard. Sorry, those fans feel seen and heard, so that we're actually listening to what those people are saying and giving back to what they're saying. And not just on socials, like, it'll be on Discord, it'll be on Instagram broadcast channels as well. So we are actually fostering a community, because we're not just asking for things from the fans or just throwing things at the fans, being like, listen to this, watch this. We're actually saying, come and be part of the conversation. Come and be part of the community. And not just the artist to fan community, but the fan to fan community as well.
Yes.
Because you want them to be able to connect with each other. Like, we have some artists who, you know, where we've worked on different Discord channels, and we'll set up different groups within those Discord channels so people can join them if they're going to gigs. And then they go and they meet up before the gigs. Like, people have met partners at, like, through that way, through chatting to people on Discord and then meeting them in person at in real life events to do with that artist, because that's what's connected them. And it's so, so lovely hearing those stories, because then that kind of goes back to ultimately, like, what art and creativity is meant to do. And it's meant to evoke a feeling, and it's meant to bring us all back together into a community.
Yeah, and it really is paying attention to both sides of the relationship, isn't it? I really love that. I love that response. We're gonna jump into the big question, because I want each one of you to be able to answer this. And you were already headed that direction, so I was like, let's go. It's a big one, and I just want everyone to just have their own take on it. There's obviously no right or wrong answer to this, but I want us to just talk about the necessity of music and creativity, and more so, I think, music as a form of creativity for connection, community, and building thriving cultures. Like, why is this so necessary for us? Like, why do we need this? And I'm going to start with Jesse first.
Why do we need it?
Before we all answer this, how long left have we got?
We've got maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah.
A little space for it. But let's just see. We've got a little space for Q&A.
Cool.
If not, then just go.
Because this could be epic.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm a big advocate for art, for creativity. I think it fosters connection. I think it gives life meaning. I think it gives a soundtrack to everyone's life as well. I think even people that say they don't really like music enjoy music, whether it's in a film that they're watching.
Can't not. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's just something that, like, everybody is moved by. And I think that sometimes you need to be distracted. And so music and art, that's the function of it. And other times you need to feel more connected. It's a breakup song. It's a graduation song. It's a wedding song, whatever it is. Like, I just think that it's so important, because it's a soundtrack for life, and take away the music from life, it's just a bit more bland. I think music makes everything a little bit better. And I'll just leave it there. I just think it's ultimately important. Yeah.
Yeah. Fundamental. Even sin.
This question is
going to blow your mind.
Oh my God. I don't know. Music kind of gives you purpose, gives life meaning. It's a reflection of yourself, as Jay was talking about as well. If you really look at the best songs, it really is like five things, you know, breakup, loss, grief. Like, like there really isn't much to really, the best music to really expound upon. I think the best things are simple. Yeah, I think music drives culture forward. I think that, you know, whenever there's a, like, economy, specifically in America. So yeah, I love making music as a person that, like, you know, I deal with my own bouts with, like, mental health. Historically, music has given me a reason to, like, breathe and honestly keep going. And so for me, it's far more intimate therapy. And so if it's therapy for me, everybody else is listening to my stuff, I would assume that it's the same for them as well, too. So yeah, I love music, and I will never stop loving music. So yeah.
I love it. It's like a balm to our human experience, isn't it? Or all of aspects of our human experience.
As someone who cannot sing or play an instrument to save a life at all, it's incredibly important to me personally, from, you know, from a mental health perspective, from a comment on society and culture perspective, which sums up both of what you guys are saying completely, and from a community perspective, the Libertines at a house party, and literally we've, like, stuck together ever since, and that's something that I just love so, so much. And, you know, being brought up with really, with a great taste in music, as I like to think, by my dad as well, like, that kind of really got me and my sisters closer to him and us closer to each other as well. So I think that, like, it really builds strong, strong bonds for people. And I think that it speaks volumes for people who don't have that talent, who don't have that musical ability. And it gives different meaning to what's going on in society today. And it actually sparks and drives conversations. And there are some artists that are really phenomenal at doing that, and some artists who are really paving the way forward for that as well in really unique ways. And I think that music is so, so important. It's something that we've had, like, I think even if you think about the fact that we all have a voice, everybody, well, most people in this world are able to, like, speak or sing. Doesn't mean you're able to do it very well, but we all have a voice, and it's actually, like, something that connects us and grounds us and brings us together. And it's something that we're able to enjoy from actually birth, you know, from being born. And it's something that's innate, and it's part of us all.
And even so sound, right? Deeper. Like, sound, yeah, is just in nature. Back to that, like, that's, it's just, yeah, everywhere, and we don't pay attention, I don't think, as much to how deeply it's part of.
Yeah. And, like, and even just, you know, the fact that nature is being recognized as an artist as well. So it's, it goes beyond just the human voice. It is the sounds that we hear every single day. It's the sounds that artists use, that musicians, yeah, use within their work, and how they use it to convey a deeper meaning that really, really connects us and, you know, lays the groundwork for future as well, because we'll have people talking about, you know, you guys' music and that in, like, 30 years' time, 50 years' time, like, way after you've gone. Like, it will, hopefully you'll live longer than that, but, like, but, like, you know, you're setting a great legacy for people to be able, yeah, to connect with beyond, yeah, your own self.
Yeah.
So I think it's just so expansive.
I 100% agree. Pete, roll this up in not too long, so get a little... We need a little Q&A.
I'm a bit scared of my answer. I'm just going to say what we were talking about when we were just talking personally about,
yes,
what it meant
do.
To ourselves and each other. But during that conversation, I was just thinking and wondering about it. And I was thinking about the idea that if... oh, God. Here we go.
Oh, go.
If an alien came down from another planet and said, show me one thing that human beings have done that represents you as a species, that we could perhaps try and understand. And we, you know, we could show them a city, something we've built, or we could show them, there's plenty of things we could show them that, you know, that we could show them. But if you showed them art, in all its amazing senses, what the one thing that I think would be amazing about that is that it doesn't make any logical sense, but it still would be the thing that I would say first, in a sense, because we've developed this thing to be able to communicate with each other that doesn't have any, it doesn't need to exist, but it's somehow the most important thing.
It doesn't feel like it needs to exist.
No, it has. It doesn't need to exist in the way that a building, you could make them understand that a city needs to exist. But the fact that it does exist and it is the most important thing communicates something that transcends, beyond all the things that we've talked about, beyond the fear that comes in and the lack of whatever you want to say, like stability and all of the things. But something you said, which really resonated with me, was that when someone comments on something, they're feeling exactly like you do when you throw a song into the world. So it's just the great communicator.
Mm. On all levels.
On all levels.
Communication on levels we don't really even understand. That's what we were talking about, the power of creative expression, where it's coming from, the magic it's pulling in from. Each other and around and all of it.
Absolutely. And like the person writing the comment, like you said, is wondering and hoping if someone will do a thumbs up or a reply, which is no different to how we feel when we put the song in. So like bringing all that together somehow, somewhere, like a platform, is, I think, how to solve so many things.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you. I mean, honestly, I think all of us can agree this conversation could carry on going. And creativity is such a big thing. And I think it's really, really relevant right now. And Roisin and I were talking just before this started. It's feeling like there's rumblings of a creative renaissance just in the chaos of the world right now. But in this time, like anchored in our time now, like what is that going to look like when we look back on it? So thank you all for contributing to it today and your wonderful creative minds. Thank you so much for all listening and engaging with us. And you can find all of us on Vero, which is free to download from all the app stores. So thank you so much.
Thank you.